Welcome back to the Munich Movie Club podcast. I am John Kissel. With me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo.
And Drew Landry.
Hello.
Here at the Munich Movie Club, we're a group of friends who more or less randomly select three movies to discuss amongst ourselves on our website, munichmovie.club. And then after those three movies have been reviewed, we get together and we discuss them on our podcast here. This last month, we strayed from the random tack we usually take, and we went with spoofs, spurred on by, I don't even remember why we did this. Nothing. Yeah, I got nothing.
I think it was, you said that we had to watch They Come Together, and then we just said, you know, everything.
Did I?
No.
No,
I'm in a benevolent leader phase. Yeah, I haven't put on my dictator hat in some time.
That also doesn't sound.
But whyever we did it, the three spoofs that we decided to talk about this month are Galaxy Quest, They Came Together, and Clue. We'll start with the least spoofy of all of these, Galaxy Quest. This is a 1999 movie that didn't have a lot of success in 1999, but it was well-received critically and has, like all of these movies, really, it has achieved some level of cult status. It is about a knockoff Star Trek show whose cast gets swept up in a real alien quest, and they have to adapt their...
Yeah, it's a Galaxy Quest, if you will.
Thank you. They have to span the galaxy to complete their quest, and they use the talents that they picked up, minimal talents from their time on the show, to solve these aliens' problems, who worship them as gods. Shane, what did you think of Galaxy Quest?
Much better than I expected.
Drew, Galaxy Quest?
I don't know. Very bland. Very bland. I wasn't expecting much. Didn't get much.
I am with Shane. I really enjoyed this movie. This is my favorite movie of the three. Strong jokes. And most surprisingly of all, a little bit of emotional resonance. To back up a couple steps, just definitionally, like spoofs versus satire. For me, spoofs make fun of fictional stuff and satire makes fun of real stuff. This movie makes fun of fictional stuff in the sense of it's about these 11 a.m. Space sci-fi shows, but primarily it's making fun of fan culture, I think, which, you know, is like a real thing. So on like the spoof satire pendulum, this is I think this is like closer to satire, especially compared to like They Came Together or Clue. So this is kind of the outlier of our three. And because it's an outlier, I think for that reason, it's the only one that I can like connect with on any like real emotional level. Like there are actual characters in this movie. There are actual like recognizable dilemmas in this movie. From like a professional standpoint, from a personal standpoint. And it's making fun of something that I, you know, as someone who cares about movies and cares about culture, like fan culture specifically, like this movie is takes place in 1999, and like fan culture is only going to get worse.
Fans of the MCU, adult fans who think that should have won Oscars, all of them.
Sure, yeah. Or every time like Vin Diesel says, "This is our best picture winning Fast and Furious," like he's just feeding these people. Like they,
yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is all before this. This is in a very early internet period. So these guys are harmless for the most part, the fans in Galaxy Quest.
Just to stick on this, so being here in Atlanta, we have Dragon Con, which is a huge, I don't know, fan nerdum thing,
yeah.
Right? Cosplay, whatever. So I'm used to it now. It doesn't feel like it's out of the ordinary. Like this, back in 99, this will all be just dorks, right?
100%, yeah. Not, and they're now it's far, like far, far from the mainstream. At a certain, yeah, these people took over the culture at a certain point.
Yes. Drew, do you feel it like that? Do you have that feeling in Texas too? Or is it just because we're insulated here in Atlanta?
Well, we get Lubbock has Comic-Con and it comes every February.
Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many Walker Texas Ranger spoofs are existence there?
God, is there Walker Texas Ranger Con? I mean,
there has to be.
God,
there
has to be.
There's Star Trek. There's Star anything. You know, whatever. You know, there's pro wrestling. There's video games. Anime people show up. I mean, it's like all throughout, like, you know, the lower Great Plains and the western parts of Texas. They just there's a back door of culture that is kind of like, I enjoy this sort of thing, and they show up.
Okay,
in Lubbock of all places. Yeah. How big is Lubbock?
Almost 300,000 people.
Okay, I don't have any sense of
Texas. It's kind of one of my former coworkers. Her daughter was super into cosplay. Like, they're just a thing that kids are into now. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's the norm. We're old.
The book I'm reading very slowly at the moment, and have been for the better part of a year. Okay, like, just keeps getting bumped back in other stuff to read in my other stuff to read queue. Fantasyland by Kurt Anderson. He takes a very it's about like just the specific ethos of America, and then its gradual accumulation of fantasy and unreality in all spheres, in culture, in politics, in economics, et cetera, et cetera. And just every time he talks about grown adults dressing up as fantasy characters, just the disdain he has for them really drips off the page. But he's in like his 50s or his 60s, but like even people in our cohort, like late 30s, we do this shit. We dress up for Halloween still.
I mean, well, Halloween's one thing.
Someone had to decide at some point. Adults are dressing up for Halloween now. It didn't used to happen.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it went out. I don't know. Like costume balls and dances and everything. I feel like that's a long running staple. But getting dressed up.
Sure, but they're like Eyes Wide Shut style orgies. with like masks.
Let's get back to that. You're going to Vegas this weekend. Bring your mask and robe.
I just might. The nose is really long, so it's not going to fit comfortably in my suitcase.
But you know where it will fit comfortably.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyways, looking on the fan culture stuff before we get into Galaxy Quest. Well, we can bridge the gap here. How does the movie feel about these people? Is it gentler than it could be? Could it be meaner? Is it mean enough already? What do you guys think?
I watched the documentary a few years ago on it was called The Best Worst Movie of All Time or something like that. Best Worst Movie dealing with Troll 2 there was this cult following of this awful movie and how everybody wanted the guy who played the dad to say that line, this one line. And you can tell Alan Rickman's character was like, I'm not saying that line, no matter what they do. It was kind of resemblant of how that guy felt after saying the line so many times. He goes, I don't want to say it anymore. And I could feel that's a bit of reality. And it was almost as if Tim Allen's character, the Jason, was kind of like living his gimmick and making all the money that he could off being that commander, off this, you know, B-rated TV show. And everybody else was kind of like just done with it. Like they didn't want to do it anymore. At least that was my feeling. So he was in it for the money and doing everything else, you know, showing up for all the paydays and just taking in whatever he could. And then, you know, and everyone else is like, I don't want to be here. And I think I think that isn't far off the mark.
Aside from the characters, the actors in the show, the fans, I feel like this treats them with probably the proper amount of respect for someone who is genuinely a fan.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of, I don't know, if you've ever been to a minor league baseball or spring training baseball game, oh my God, the autograph hounds are ridiculous. And it's no wonder these actors sour on the fans so quickly. It's because the one bad act, all you need is one out of 100 that you know, to piss in your Cheerios and that's it, right? So I think this, I don't think it's, you know, it doesn't have, I think it just, it approaches it correctly. It doesn't give us any of the bad fans here.
Yeah.
So
like the fan that saves the day is like a well-meaning teenager.
Yeah.
Instead of a man in his 30s who like has a neck beard and hates women. And
right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's, you know, if especially now that that's way more common, that these people are going to be so aggressive.
Yeah, sure. Like Justin Long's character grew up at a certain point and maybe became that guy.
Right.
In the universe of Galaxy Quest.
So, but I think that's a big difference. 22 years makes right there in how the fan culture.
Yeah. Like they still have the sense of being a nerd despite them controlling all of culture, more or less.
They'd be punching down to attack these guys.
Yes, that is true. And just because, in 1989, they're more or less powerless. Well, Star Wars Episode One would have probably been like the highest grossing movie of that year, but like not far behind it would have been like American Beauty or so many movies came out, and or like The Sixth Sense. Sixth Sense, I guess, doesn't count. 1999 was like a fulcrum point. The biggest fans in Galaxy Quest are the aliens themselves, whose species name I don't have off the top of my head. I think it has a lot of respect and sympathy for them, just because they don't know any better. Like the fans on Earth, they have so many other things that they could potentially dedicate their interest to and their brain power, but they've chosen to, you know, point it at this awful TV show.
It's a nice riff off of, like, there's no sarcasm, there's no lying. I mean, isn't that like
that's ingrained in their culture. They don't know what lies are. They have to be told what lies are. There's no guile. There's no deception. Everything is very straightforward. They don't even understand, like, fiction in the sense of, like, all fiction is, as Egbert Flaps will say, if it didn't happen, it's a lie. He doesn't understand the idea of fiction.
They came together. I could go on and on about that. We'll go on and on about that in a second. Yeah, I like that they use that, and this movie makes way more sense just because those that little decision. Like these guys can't figure out lies. Mm-hmm. Obviously, advanced though. But then these other people are predators. Of course, they're gonna take them over. So
yes,
good work. Good work, yeah. Galaxy Quest.
The key moment in Galaxy Quest for me, it's not a joke, but it is, Drew, you mentioned Alan Rickman's character who gets saddled with this nonsensical line about Grabthar's hammer or whatever.
Yeah.
And he gets a moment when it is applicable to say to a person who thinks Grabthar's hammer is a real thing. And the dying alien actor sells that moment. Alan Rickman sells that moment. It wouldn't work if it was like Justin Long's character.
Yeah,
dying, because again, this is all fake, this is all silly, but it absolutely works in the movie because the alien thinks it's real, and Alan Rickman, you know, can give him this as this alien is dying. It's a really great scene. I really didn't expect it in this movie at all, that kind of bridging the gap between comedy and drama in a movie as absurd as this. Like that alien is actually a disgusting squid thing. It just happens to look like a human in this moment. Like, you don't have those kind of moments in spoofs. Like, that moment takes Galaxy Quest out of a spoof genre into something different. Like, Walk Hard isn't going to make me give me a lump in my throat.
Right. And the squid comment, I do like this movie. Does care about what is going on enough that it gives you quick, simple explanations why they don't look like squids, why they look like people. You know, why they're able to communicate. They just give a couple quick things. You don't need to explain the technology. Just say, there's our flabbergaster and our Flober thing, right? Translator. Great, done. Thank you. Now I don't have to spend the rest of the movie wondering about it.
Drew, me and Shane are pretty much in the same area critically. And what about Galaxy Quest didn't work for you?
Yeah, it was cheesy. That's what it was. I mean, I didn't expect it to be anything more than that, and that's what I got. There's some moments that you can go, hey, that guy's going to be is going to have a really good future, like Rain Wilson. I mean, he's one of those termites, I guess that's what they're called. I don't know. And there's their leader. He looked familiar. So, I mean, there's guys playing some good roles. Well, some roles in this film that are going to move on and have fairly successful careers later on. But other than that, I mean, there were parts of it I just felt sorry for Alan Rickman. And I thought, how much is he getting paid to do this? And same thing with Sigourney Weaver. and how they had to deal with Tim Allen. Because, I mean, this has to be like the best thing Tim Allen has done since Tool Time or
like live action wise. Like, yeah. He was like Buzz Lightyear as far as
outside of being Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah.
And doing like actually acting in live action, not, yeah, right. This has to be, you know, outside of his TV show in the 90s. That was, you know, this has to really be it. So I wasn't expecting much. It gave me what I thought it, you know, like, okay, you know, and so that's why I'm like, I don't know what I gave it, like a C plus or something like that, B minus. Yeah. That's where I think its arc is.
That's totally fair. I'm probably at a B on this.
I'm at a B plus. Really great. I thought it was very strong.
A B plus for me in like a, I don't want to say gimmicky movie, like, but like a genre, specific genre movie like this. Mm-hmm. A B plus to me is generally as good as it gets.
Sure. So, yeah. Right? So if it's going to be a genre movie, yeah, it's got to be both a very good example of a genre, and it has to be able to break out of its genre a little bit too. It can't be limited by its genre, and I don't think that Galaxy Quest is.
I think it's limited. It is cheesy, a bit cheesy and somewhat predictable, but yeah, it's better than I thought.
I think this is certainly the best performed movie of the round. With Alan Rickman, Enrico Colantoni plays the leader of the aliens. The good aliens. He shows up in Just Shoot Me, and he's got a working actor, Enrico Colantoni. Like Missy Pyle as the female alien. I think she just has great reactions to stuff, and some of like the noises that come out of her mouth are really funny. Just really strong, like elemental comedic performances from a lot of people in major roles and in like small roles in the background. Like everybody is like making the absolute maximum of their screen time.
What is so wild is I think Sigourney Weaver is actually probably the worst acted part of everybody.
I don't know. But, I thought everybody was.
I mean, fine. She's not bad. I think everyone else. It's more in their wheelhouse. I don't see her as a comedic actor.
Sure. I mean, like there are two female roles in the whole movie. So yeah, she has to, and like that was her role in the show. It makes sense for the movie about the characters, the actors in the show to, you know, like discount her because the show discounts her. Like her job is to recite what the computer is saying. She's not decoding anything. She's just repeating it.
Yeah. And I will say about Sigourney Weaver, I know we're not allowed to talk about how people look anymore, but I hope I look as good as that.
She's great.
Almost 50. She's almost 50 in this movie. Jesus.
Yeah. She was in Alien Resurrection a couple years earlier, and she was like throwing basketballs over her shoulder on first take and just nailing it.
Athlete.
Do you guys have any love for these kind of shows, like 70s version? I never watched. I would flip past Star Trek Next Generation and recognize Whoopi Goldberg here and there, but I never like stuck on the channel.
I wanted to, but no one else I knew was into it, so I just kind of never got. It was never something I got into.
Like the knockoffs, like Babylon 5 and Battlestar Galactica. Like I did watch the modern Battlestar Galactica, which was really good. But I certainly never watched the old one.
If someone wanted me to watch some Star Treks, I would absolutely be 100% in right now. Mm-hmm. Like sure, I'm in. I'd watch. Like pick out a couple. The one I've watched, I absolutely loved. So
William Shatner is in a Vin Diesel category for me, where I just really despise that person's persona. It makes it very difficult for me to watch something that they're in.
I think if I was to watch. I mean, if I was to watch Star Trek, I'd have to go. I'd have to find like, you know, go to the very beginning, because it's such a long story and there's so much interaction, and I'd have to start from the very beginning, which was like what, in the late 60s, and you'd have to really get yourself caught up. I mean, I'd be interested in it, but you know, it would take a lot of effort, and I never watched those. Like I didn't watch the X-Files. I didn't watch Buffy. But none of those like sci-fi, Babylon 5, Battlestar Galactica, they just weren't really in my wheelhouse, you know, during the 90s and any other time behind that.
Too busy playing basketball.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and baseball and whatever else, and, you know, and GoldenEye. But I think, like the best spoof on this was something that we watched about 6 years ago. It wasn't about this, like the Star Trek-y type of things, but it was about Star Wars, and it was Spaceballs. I thought that was probably the best spoof on a sci-fi space type of a film. And it's just as goofy as ever.
We have different senses of humor, Drew.
No, I actually agree. I think Spaceballs is fantastic.
Yeah.
I think the joke, "We ain't found shit," is still my favorite joke.
Have either of you guys ever been to like a convention, like a nerd convention? No, I have not.
Never.
I've been to an academic convention. Does that count?
Different kind of nerd.
No.
Okay. No.
All right. Before we get on to They Came Together, we'll play a quick round of our movie game.
Do you feel all like right. playing against me and Drew right now is just like...
What I mean... It's the bar is low. I'm going to fact check you more often, I think. We learned a lesson from the last time.
Last debacle.
The random number generator spit out number 2129, Poltergeist. And I start as usual. I name an actor from Poltergeist, and Shane names another movie that actor is in. And I've never seen Poltergeist, but I do know that Craig T. Nelson is in it.
Craig T. Nelson.
Oh, we just watched a movie that he was in pretty recently.
I'm not allowed to say Coach, am I?
Sadly, that has not been adapted for the cinema. Oh,
damn it. Craig T. Nelson. I can't think of any.
Some big voiceover work from him as well.
I got nothing.
Also with Pixar.
I got nothing. I don't know what he's in. I have no fucking idea.
Drew, Craig T. Nelson?
He's just Coach to me.
He was in the Incredibles.
He was, yes, with Holly Hunter.
Challenge. What's another movie with Holly Hunter?
Oh boy, Raising Arizona. All right, quick round of the movie game.
I actually never realized that was Craig T. Nelson
as
in the Incredibles.
Yeah, he was also in The Skulls.
Which is first, come on, yeah. Me!
How could you? How could the Skulls leave your come mind for any period
Shane.
Of time?
He was in Coach.
Always be thinking about the Skulls.
You're challenging Coach. I wouldn't be able to.
Jerry Van Dyke is that the assistant?
I think you're right. Yeah.
I can't remember who played Dauber.
Dauber.
He had old Dauber much of a career after.
of those three, who'd you rather have a beer with?
Jerry Van Dyke, probably.
Jerry Van Dyke.
He seemed fun.
I'm going to get Dauber wrecked.
Whatever his name was.
Can't wait to get Dauber wrecked and he gets into a depression. That'd be good.
I would imagine Dauber started the show as a player and then became a coach because they wanted to keep him around. Is that what happened? I wasn't laser focused in on the coach lore.
Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I watched it. My parents watched it, so I watched it with them.
That's Coach's Corner.
With Coach's Corner.
With Coach Kissel or Coach Shane. Do you coach anything, Drew?
No.
Loser. All right.
Nope. Sure didn't.
You're the Dauber of our
game. Oh, you don't hang out with middle school boys on your spare time for fun?
Our next movie is They Came Together, directed by David Wayne of the... What were those guys called?
The Wayan Brothers.
The Wayan Brothers?
No, not that. Not those Waynes.
Oh.
I can't remember what his group is called. The shit. What was it? They had that MTV group. The State.
The State.
The
yes.
State.
Yes, there we go.
Directed by David Wayne of The State, like a third tier comedy improv troupe. Not improv. One sketch troupe.
Yeah, they were. But they're probably Kids in the Hall, too.
No, predates.
Okay.
Yeah. He previously would have directed Wet Hot American Summer, a camp spoof, and They Came Together as his rom-com spoof. Initial thoughts on They Came Together, Shane?
This is as good. This is as good as any sort of spoof can get. It is. I love this movie.
True? They Came Together?
Oh, man. I mean, if I tell bad jokes, and if I'm eye-rolling at some of this, you know it's got to be bad.
You can say that again.
It's got to be bad.
You didn't tell me about it.
I'm not doing that, no.
I think They Came Together as exactly the right length. If it was any longer, it would really start to lose me.
Correct.
Like, I really enjoy Walk Hard, as we previously mentioned, the story, the legend of whatever it is of Dewey Cox. But I always find myself falling asleep a little bit in the middle of it because the joke is the joke.
Should have tried some cocaine.
But yeah, They Came Together... Very short. This is as spoofy as a spoof can get. all of the jokes are rooted in rom-com tropes and how silly they are. There are not characters in this movie. There are vehicles for more jokes.
I think New York is a character.
New York is, of course, a character in the movie. Yes, but it's just a place where dead bodies hide under leaf piles. Like, what do you really know about New York by the end of the movie?
That was so weird.
You know, you understand that a coffee stand, it just isn't going to work on a corner. It really needs a building.
Oh, what a great reveal.
We mentioned that.
I just couldn't believe that.
The spoof continuum. Yeah, this is the spoof satire continuum. Spoof. Yeah. This is 100% spoof. This is so we talked about how Galaxy Quest, how it feels about sci-fi fans. How does this movie feel about fans of romantic comedies? Like, if a fan, if someone who just loved Made in Manhattan sat down and watched They Came Together, would they come away with their intelligence insulted, do you think?
I think they'd be pretty mad. Like, this is not how those movies go. I could just see it already, yeah.
I disagree. I think this is written by people who like rom-coms. You have to have had watched a lot of rom-coms to nail this,
yeah,
as well as they did.
I kind of agree with Drew in that I think this movie thinks rom-coms are really bad movies.
I mean, they are. I thought everyone
top to bottom trash.
I thought that was understood. They are not good movies by definition. It just is what it is. That's why you occasionally have a good one, and then that's it.
I mean, that's a part of the burgeoning fan culture we talked about with Galaxy Quest, is that if you don't like something that I like, you're insulting me personally. Like, you're taking a bat to my tastes, which I can only interpret as hostility. And I kind of think They Came Together is hostile. I don't necessarily think that if someone told me like Assassination Jesse James was like slow and ponderous and not about anything, I'd be like, well, you're wrong, but I'm fine that you have that opinion.
Yes. Yeah.
Whereas if someone had the collected works of Kate Hudson prominently displayed on their mantelpiece and then they watched They Came Together, I don't know.
But why would anyone have the collected works of Kate Hudson on their mantle?
Somebody must. Somebody must.
I mean, it's okay to make fun of that person. I suppose. They're not watching this.
I said she.
Yeah. Way to go, buddy.
If this person has Almost Famous like in the mix, then okay, something. Sure. But if it's just like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days and some other Kate Hudson movie, I don't know,
the one with 27 Dresses and
the other one with Matthew McConaughey, yeah. He was in several.
I don't think it's I don't know, like there, it has some sort of respect, but I also think rom-coms generally know what they are. Like, unlike the MCU, sure, no rom-com fans are like, this is the best movie of the year.
It would be nice if we had, like, a rom-com defender. It doesn't seem like we do amongst the three of us. I think they're bad and silly and dumb and the same.
Yeah, totally. Like, but would I watch it? Yeah.
No.
Absolutely. So is Jerry Maguire a rom-com?
That's a good question. I think
Boogie Nights is.
I'm sorry, what?
What's your reaction?
All right, you've been drinking that tequila with the scorpion down there.
Funnier than anything that happens in Clue. That joke that
wow.
you just made.
Wow. Clue.
Well, to be continued. What was I talking about? Oh, Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
I feel like that's more workplace focused. I kind of think like the Renee Zellweger stuff is like the B plot.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I feel like it's the opposite, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know. But that's the example I think of somewhere where you can go with a good rom-com that isn't just pure, you know, popcorn movie, I suppose, right?
Sure.
But even though sometimes just turn your brain off and just watch a movie. It doesn't always have to be amazing, right? I don't know. Am I alone in this?
I mean, I'm in my screener portion of the year for the Atlanta Film Festival, and as much as I would like to turn my brain off for some of those movies, which vary in quality, it's hard. I'm not supposed to do that. That's kind right. of like, and just, you know, being an extremely amateur critic for 7-8 years, you know, that's also, you're always looking out for stuff. I can't help it. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I do think, though, that it is good to watch these kind of movies that make fun of anything, because they really underline the recurring tropes and cliches that whatever movie they're making fun of picks on. Pop Star, Walk Hard Again, They Came Together, Wet Hot American Summer. Like, it's just the best versions of these kind of movies make it more or less impossible to go back to watching this like a bog standard musician biopic. If you're going to make a musician biopic and you haven't seen Walk Hard, you are going to fall into a trap because that movie has your number. And They Came Together has rom-com. And the rom-coms have kind of like failed as a genre. I think that Netflix is doing a lot of them.
Yeah. But then no one's going to. Yeah. No one. Who's watching them?
I would imagine teenagers.
Right.
They're mostly about teenagers, it seems. I've never seen a single one of those.
Simmons talks about this a lot.
He does. Yeah.
You know, just these movies aren't getting made. Comedies, you know, in mass aren't getting made. Like, sure. He's talking about the latest rewatchable about Dirty Work, and like, yeah, there's like 40 comedies in 1998, and Dirty Work might have been like the 38th ranked one, but that's.
I like Dirty Work.
I love Dirty Work.
Dirty Work's funny. It is. It was.
You're gonna you'll enjoy that pod when you get to it in 2023.
I'm up to date more or less on the rewatchable.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So yeah, this isn't getting made. Like, rom-coms aren't getting made, and
because They Came Together, like, it would have more or less started plateauing in 2014, 2015. So
it would be
Came Together, a movie that was in no way successful, just killed a whole genre. It really like shoveled the last bit of dirt on top of the grave.
Or just the same time that all the MCU movies have come out. Sure, and they were
really kicking into gear then as well. The specific. Briefly, I mean, it's just nothing but thwarting rom-com tropes, but just a few of them, like just like the framing device. It really bugs me when like movies take place in the past and are being told as a story, just because so many movies do this and there's never any good reason. And then they never stick with the trope anyways. Like, retelling the story of Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler getting together is what the movie is.
Yeah,
which I feel like doesn't exist for any reason other than the epilogue, which, you know, these kind of movies end when the relationship is going to proceed or is successful, and you never see what happens afterwards. Characters that are very often, you know, not supposed to be together. They're not compatible in any way. They're just two attractive people that happen to have been cast in a movie about nothing. Amy Poehler develops a pill addiction. The coffee stand craps out, obviously. They get divorced. really clever, really funny. That's one of my favorite jokes in the whole movie. We see that the only thing that these kind of movies exist for is to put these two people together, and like the idea that Amy Poehler would be like running a candy shop whose profits are donated to charity, and she just gives a bunch of candy away, and he works in a corporate. Leviathan, who is really concerned with destroying this one tiny storefront that makes no money, and I could go on and on and on. Like Teyonah Parris plays the black best friend who has no interests of her own, who only exists to prop up the main character. So much the better that she's black. Like the movie can have, you know, it's New York. New York's character in the movie. New York's a diverse place. Look at how we cast these minorities in this movie about white people. And then she will just drop everything to babysit.
Fantastic.
For Michael Shannon's son.
I thought like one of the best scenes in there was when they did the video of Norah Jones of doing like the love music. And then like all of these people in other movies, you know, you got Adam Scott, like, you know, and for some reason there was other people in there too. I can't think of their names just off the top of my head, but looking around and at the end they were clapping and it was like some like production of something. And they actually used the name Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler.
It was so good. Let me tell you, I said the first time I watched this, I didn't take any edibles. I watched it taking an edible this time, and this shit gets even funnier because you kind of forget what you're doing. And then you look up all of a sudden and you're in that recording studio and you're like, what the fuck did I miss? Well,
I hit the special features menu on accident. That scene and the bartender scene with the tell me about it, et cetera, and then Paul Rudd and his brother who can't say goodbye to each other without saying thanks. The recording studio, those are all funny jokes.
Yeah.
Kind of.
They are.
They are.
It's they get to a place of where it's like funny and then not funny and then becomes funny again. Drew might disagree, but I agree.
I actually thought something was wrong with my streaming of Hulu with that tell me about it. You could see that again. I don't know. I did it like six or seven times. I thought, is this, are they just hitting, like, what's going on?
All that is indicative of the lack of material, I think. They're really stretching the movie out to feature length. And it's barely feature length. It's very short.
Good.
And a good 15 to 20 minutes of it are just these very long one-joke scenes. Yeah.
Fantastic.
But yeah, I love it. Your mileage may vary.
I mean, if you like Dirty Work, that's Dirty Work is just sketches put together around a loose plot, right?
That's sure, this, and like Step Brothers is the epitome of that as well. Yeah, I don't necessarily need a lot of conflict in my movie, but yeah.
Yeah,
they're literally repeating themselves. And they came fantastic. Together. Like Amy Poehler, her book, she did write one of those books where she included blank pages in it for like the reader to, I don't know, put their dreams down or some shit. They came together kind of doing the exact same thing. We need to pad this out.
Love it.
They were all in their element doing silly things that were, you know, funny at some moment. Yeah.
I think it's way harder for actors to be funny than it is for comedians and being actors.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, what are the examples here?
Well, everyone I think is a comedian first, except for Paul Rudd.
And Michael Shannon.
Who fucking nails it. Jesus Christ, he comes in firing.
Best tertiary character. Michael Shannon is high in the running. He has one very small scene and then gets shot in the face. Ken Marino was one of the basketball players. He's just doing a lot of very funny physical stuff. And Christopher Maloney's boss, another... The best extension... like runtime extension joke in They Came Together is his problems with his full body Halloween costume.
Yeah,
I think that's absolutely genius. That has no place in this movie. It's not making fun of a rom-com thing. It's a skit. That's a skit that made it into the movie, or a sketch that made it into the movie.
Like, do you think Maloney will do this? Let's find out.
I mean, he voiced a talking can in Wet Hot American Summer. So I think he's just not for anything.
Talking can.
No. You're right. That was
David Wayne was like
H. John Benjamin. Oh, was the can.
Okay, that's right.
But yeah, he humped the refrigerator.
He did hump the refrigerator.
Yeah, he'll do whatever. He'll. that's a very funny scene. Something else to say for it, just top to bottom. But yes, Chris Maloney, based on the strength of that scene, fantastic. He was my favorite, like third line character. Do you guys want to like single anybody out that had like one or two lines?
My favorite, my favorite joke this time that I don't think I recall from last time is the secretary being on the phone, and she goes, and then he went down on me, and I came in like 1 second, and she says, "Oh, I gotta go see your dad."
Yeah.
Oh God. I love that.
Well, a swerve that just was, I don't know why it was even in there. It was all of a sudden when Colby Smulders' character, Tiffany, turns into Judge Judy. It's like, wait a minute. What was the point of that? So he's been dating Judge Judy the entire time? I mean, that was a weird swerve.
I wish I had taken notes last night when I was watching it. Like, but yeah, the Judge Judy thing was pretty far out even for me.
Yeah, so I'm like, wait a minute.
But before or after like the taboo sex montage?
Oh God,
with her and Paul Rudd.
That's so great.
That was way after that. Yeah.
See, that's a pretty smart jig. Like, you never see him and Amy Poehler have sex because she's like the nice actress protagonist, and like the evil third woman. Yeah, you see her. I just do wrestling moves with Paul Rudd.
It was so fun.
And then who's the couple they're with? They're back and forth all night. I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, very much hate each other and are together anyways. Like, they have their own version of falling into pill abuse and failed coffee shops in their backstory.
Now, when you said taboo, I thought you were going to talk about him almost fucking his grandma.
Ugh.
See again. It's so dense.
That was such a weird moment. I couldn't wait to skip past that.
I'll add it to the masturbating Kevin Memorial Award for most uncomfortable.
There we go.
That's good. Hey, do you all think this is like up there with like the Not Another Teen movies and the Scary Movies and all the other spoofs that were up there?
It's better done.
I think
Wet Hot American Summer is better than this, but this is right up there with that. I think it's spoofs.
You mentioned the Naked Gun. I think the Naked Gun is like best of breed as far as spoof movies go. Especially the first one. And everything is kind of like living in their shadow.
I should write down my top five, just like flesh it out. I think this would probably make it.
We did do Top Secret a long time ago.
That was
Top Secret's fine. I think it's fine.
A couple good scenes, yeah.
Anyways, another round of the movie game. We'll see if this one provides a little more back and forth. Number generator spit out number 618, which is Apollo 13.
Oh,
so I will say Bill Paxton.
Twister
to Drew.
Twister with Helen Hunt.
Sure, Helen Hunt was in As Good As It Gets.
With Greg Kinnear.
Sure.
Greg Kinnear was in Challenge. Name another movie with Greg Kinnear.
Oh, shit. No, I'm going to blank out. He was in that movie with Matt Damon. God damn it.
Yeah, that was one of those comedies that doesn't get made anymore. Yeah. Sadly, we don't get movies like that.
I can't think of that.
I'm striking out too. Actually, I said it, and I'm like, I shouldn't have done that to myself. He's going to challenge me, and I can't think of some other Greg Kinnear stuff. I'm a failure. Sorry.
So, okay, in this case, I'll take the challenge. Okay. And he is in Stuck on You.
God damn it. I can see it. I can see the picture, too.
Stuck on You to Drew. Let's see if Drew is paying attention
to what I just said.
He was in Stuck on You with Matt Damon.
Great. Matt Damon was in he was in School Days. Wait, no, School Ties. That's what that movie was called, right? Why am I doing this to myself? He was in Courage Under Fire.
Wow.
He was in School Something. I can't remember.
Courage Under Fire, such a classic movie, had Rodney Dangerfield.
I'm afraid that is incorrect.
Sure.
That was a good guess.
That was Meg Ryan, Denzel Washington. Before we get to round three, however, we got to talk about Clue, from the 80s, based on the board game, a spoof of chamber dramas a la Hercule Poirot, Agatha Christie type stuff. Shane, what do you think of Clue?
I love the last 25 minutes, and then the rest of it is kind of a letdown.
True, Clue.
Slow at the beginning, tells the story that makes the last 25 minutes or so very exciting and hilarious.
I think this movie sucks.
Yeah.
I think Clue is bad. I think, I think there's absolutely nothing here.
Is it the homophobia?
I mean, that's kind of just par for the course for the 80s, especially like John Landis is the writer of this movie. John Landis is one of like the founding members of like the National Lampoon movie area, and like all of the comedies that come out of that, Kentucky Fried Movie, Animal House, Trading Places, and then his last good movie was probably Coming to America, and then he made a lot more crap and had a terrible son after that, and Max Landis, who is like persona non grata these days. But I don't really like any of those movies. Like Trading Places, I think is
You don't like Coming to America?
I've never seen Coming to America.
Oh, Coming to America
is
great.
Is okay. That's fair. But something like Animal House, I feel like I would not laugh a second at that if I sat down and watched it.
Animal House, I think, is wildly overrated. But I think it's also one of those comedies that it just has to hit you when you're that age. And I have respect for that.
I feel like, when I was that age, I was watching like Chris Farley type stuff, which is very much a descendant of, John Belushi. But I don't know. It just wasn't as I find Animal House to be like hateful in a way that I kind of think Clue is hateful.
I don't know. I think comedy is one of those things that changes over time. Well, sure. What is funny changes. I'm 100%. What was funny 20 years ago isn't funny now. What's funny 40 years ago may not be funny now. There's topical humor. There's, you know, contemporary society.
I think what stays consistent is like tone. And I think at a certain point, comedies became less mean over a broad continuum. Like, I don't like Judd Apatow comedies are rarely, if ever, mean.
Sure, sure.
It's not like mean, like Wedding Crashers is, I think, is a mean movie, and Old School is kind of a mean movie too. The Hangover, those are mean movies. So it's not like it goes away, but I really don't think I like mean comedies. I think it's a thing. And I think Clue is kind of mean.
Is it?
I think so.
What?
I don't think it likes anybody. And I think it has some admiration for Tim Curry based on the amount of dialogue they give him at the end. But everybody else is all complicit. They're all wrapped up in some kind of DC type scandal that's related to the culture of the 50s.
I mean, I just can't believe someone, I assume Landis went to Harvard as well.
I would imagine, yeah, that
just can't believe someone
the
like
Harvard Lampoon.
Someone who went to Harvard would be have such a negative outlook on everybody.
Sure, yeah. Down on, well, I mean, his peers in this case, right. Harvard types.
I feel like that is the thing where you're in those circles and you see how shitty everyone is to get to those seats of power. So you just assume everyone out there is like that.
Yeah, and like that's what a lot of those comedies are about is like slobs versus snobs, the Revenge of the Nerds, and especially like the Animal House types. Like the villains are the people that are, you know, wrapping sweaters around their necks and are in the Alpha House and whatever. And
the good guys
and the Delta guys just want to barf up chocolate on each other or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
that sounds fun.
And you know,
that's cool. There's no middle ground.
Good old fashioned stuff like looking at women in the peephole in a shower, right?
God, that's not genre. I haven't seen any of these movies.
Yeah.
I didn't write a long review of Clue because I found it empty, and there just wasn't a lot to say. But I just haven't seen a lot of these comedies, and I think I'm right to not have. I don't regret it at all. I don't regret it at all. Those are episodes of the rewatchables that I can delete. I don't have any interest in this era of comedy.
I didn't realize it was a National Lampoon guy, which totally makes sense that someone from National Lampoon would have written this.
I mean, he did only write the story as opposed to like the dialogue. I don't necessarily know how that breaks down. You see that a lot, like screenplay by, story by. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that Landis wrote the structure, perhaps, or a broader outline, and then the person who wrote the screenplay fleshed it out and wrote the jokes. But there are unquestionably jokes, quote-unquote jokes, in Clue that very much fit into a National Lampoon style of humor.
Yes.
Like a lot of cleavage.
God bless
A her. Lot of shit. A lot of gay dudes are gross, and I can't sit next to one. I don't really know
if there's a lot of shit in the film. I mean, there was just references at the beginning. I don't really know if there was throughout the film as there was
That's the only thing I was referring to.
Right.
It's repeated for every character that comes beginning. In. It wasn't funny the first time, and they're going to do it again and again. It's not like it's doing the opposite of what the long jokes and They Came Together are doing. It's not funny to start, and as it goes on, it does not become funny.
It was funny at the start, and it was funny when they did it.
But it's just shit on someone's shoes that smells bad. That's the joke.
When I was putting
it's the play. Joke that they didn't see the shit that they stepped on, and they go, "What does that smell?"
When I was putting my smaller child to bed tonight, he said, "Daddy, your breath smells, and I don't like it." That's funny.
Solid gag. Funnier than anything in Clue. Way to go.
No, that's
way to go.
That's not it.
No, way to go, smaller set than a child. You become a comedy writer.
That's right.
Get thee to Harvard.
A lot of garlic for dinner. I mean, the cauliflower pasta tonight. Have you ever had that?
I haven't. Like pasta made of cauliflower?
It's made of pasta. Yeah, no, pasta made of cauliflower.
I'm having pasta made of wheat.
Wheat.
Tonight.
It
wasn't monkey brains.
It wasn't monkey brains. That's right. Nice.
Another great 80s joke.
What was it with monkey brains in the 80s?
I don't know.
All right, where are we going?
I don't know.
That?
The part that makes it so good is, yeah, I mean, it's slow to tell the story, But what is so great about it, and that what makes it the funny parts, is what Shane and I agree on is really the best part is the last 25 minutes, and it's the physical comedy of Tim Curry as he's running around and explaining everything and how he finally understood what happened. And that's, and everyone else is, you know, they know what happened in one of those endings. It was somebody, Peacock, Green, and then everybody was in on it. So they all know, but Curry finds it out at some point and explains to everybody, and they're like, oh, hey, you figured it out. Would you look at this? So I think the way he explains the entire murder and the way that he runs around and does that, I think that is the part that's the classic part of Clue. I mean, I'm going to take a hot take here, and no one's going to agree with me, but I think this is Tim Curry's best film, is the fact that he is a great physical comedian.
He single-handedly saves this movie. I think there's a lot that could be kind of cut out or just made more succinct in the first hour and a half, because this is almost a two-hour movie, right?
I think it's pretty short, like an hour and a half. Was it 90 to 100 minutes? I think
90 to 100 minutes. Okay.
Feels like a fucking eternity.
It got a little long there, but the last, I think that's probably why this movie is so beloved, as far as like a cult movie status, is because of the last 20-25 minutes.
I think seeing it in theaters and understanding that you only saw one of three endings, that would have added a lot of cachet to it, even though it was a failure.
I would have rather. I think having all three endings.
Bad. I think it's bad.
Oh, I love all three endings.
No, they're great.
I think seeing them back to back reveals how weak each ending is, because there's nothing specific to each ending. It could be anybody.
I think that's the
genre. Could be anybody at the beginning. It could be anybody at the end. It doesn't matter.
Unfortunately, that is that genre.
And that is the board game, because it's based off the board game. It could be anybody.
If this movie is
a choice. It's a choice to make a movie about a board game where you just draw cards to see who was the murderer. It's utterly random in the game. It's utterly random in the movie. So that's, to me, that's a fatal flaw.
Right, but I think this movie's made now, like, the dog shit comes back into play, right? Because we've gotten smart about making movies like
this. I kind of thought that was the only way that would redeem the repeated dog shit. Like, someone would smell dog shit in a room and, like, oh my gosh, who could it be? And that would narrow it down to a few people. Like, in the ending, it just doesn't matter.
Dog shit was just funnier. Quicksand was more prevalent, and dog shit was funnier in the 80s.
Well, like, that would have made it work. Like, make the quote-unquote joke and then tie it into the plot some way. That just isn't the case here. It's just secret passages and, like, the movie is lying to you. Like, a character is out of the frame and they're off running, they're off murdering people. Yeah. And they come back and everything is fine. No big deal. Nobody noticed. It would take, like, this is happening within seconds. And just because they're off screen doesn't mean they had time to do all this shit. It doesn't make sense. And the movie just ultimately comes down to, like, how much patience you have for, like, Tim Curry reading pages of dialogue, rapid fire, with that frenetic Flight of the Bumblebee-esque score, and occasionally Professor Plum chimes in with something or other.
Sure. Christopher Lloyd.
Nothing.
Christopher Lloyd completely wasted in this movie.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I don't think this was like the usual, like, comedy team for these kind of movies. Like, Madeline Kahn, she's just weird. She's one of them.
The Spider.
Scarlet.
Miss Scarlet is the.
She's the Madam.
She's the Madam. Yeah. Knock off Susan Sarandon, whoever that is.
Yeah, yeah. The Widow is Madeline Kahn.
Yeah.
Line readings. Like, Michael McKean plays Mr. Green. He was in This Is Spinal Tap not too long ago. And then, like, he'll get mixed in, like, the Christopher Guest crew once that forms in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Christopher Lloyd. And I don't know, just, like, all the extraneous people that show up at this house and are just quickly murdered. It was just more stuff than a movie this flimsy could handle. Just adding more character, just adding bodies. I mean, who cares about any of it? Saving Grace would have been if it was funny.
It was funny, John. I'm sorry you didn't like it, but they're bringing in people who are connected to one another because they're about to tell whoever they're talking to on the phone, hey, I just saw somebody. I saw my old boss, and then click, they're dead.
Yeah.
And they're able
to. Why are those people all at that house at the same time?
What was that?
Why are they all happen to be there? Why did that just happen?
They're all blackmailed somehow.
Sloppy job by the FBI just letting people get murdered.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, they're outside the whole time.
But that, you know, honestly, probably checks out for the FBI.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, we know now.
But
Madeline Kahn had some really funny lines in there about how she hated Yvette so much that her eyeballs were coming out, or whatever the line is.
Flames on fire. Yeah.
Yeah. And how her husband is on his back. And she's got some good lines in there, but just what I said before, I mean, it requires you to pay just a little bit of attention and the story is a bit slow going, but once, you know, everything's tied together, you get, oh, okay, I get it now, because Tim Curry is able to put it together with his fantastic acting performance, and it's funny
because he explicitly tells you what happened. He doesn't leave anything for the viewer to discover. Like, this isn't the kind of movie where, like, if you went back and watch it, and I'm not going to do this, so maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're
There's
right.
There's no way you could go back and watch it like, oh yeah, it was so and so the whole time, because he just. The movie just makes it all up at the end. And I think it fails as a comedy, which is, as subjective as placing movies on any kind of rating scale or critical scale. But I also think it fails as a chamber mystery, in that it doesn't make me care about who died. It doesn't make me care about who killed him and why. It doesn't even assemble like a Rube Goldberg style machine of this right. happened and this happened. I just think it's a total empty exercise that relies on its ending, the novelty of its ending, but that novelty goes away when you're just seeing them all in quick succession.
I'm fine. Because
if you saw this movie in theaters, this movie is like 75 minutes long. Because you only saw one ending,
right?
And then you didn't get the extra two tacked on.
Well, to get to the last ending, it takes an hour and a half to get to that last to get the first ending anyway, mm-hmm. and then rolls off. But
right,
it's not clever. It's just not clever. So it's limited.
Yeah, well, it isn't exactly
bring on the Hungry Hippos movie.
I would watch that.
Yeah, I'd watch it.
Stars of the Rock. No, give me a gritty Hungry Hippos.
They're cannibals.
Well, no, the hippos, like, it's like people going through some sort of, like, where are hippos from? Where are they live?
Africa, in general.
Africa, so Serengeti. So someone's going through the Serengeti, they got to get to, like, some sort of, like, treasure or lost city, and there's hippo attacks.
I can imagine the Disney ride as we speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is The Rock in it? or do you want to go
kind of
gritty?
Tone are you looking for?
I mean, I would like to do the semi-gritty horror kind of one, mm-hmm. but maybe that. I mean,
those do that's kill a campy. Lot of people.
They do. Yeah, they're actually dangerous animals.
Yes,
that might be a little campy. But I guess to make it a proper Hollywood movie, you have to have a white person as the hero and make sure all the African guides die. Right?
Maybe he, and I do say he on purpose.
Right.
Sacrifices himself. For one of the African guides at the end.
That would be the woke Hungry Hippos.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah. That'd be the subversion of the genre.
And Brie Larson's in it for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. She does just show up randomly, it seems.
As long as she's not running. Just, I
like
cannot.
Captain Marvel?
I can't watch her run again.
Okay. That's it. that's it for Clue. Let's play a final round of the movie game.
3-1-2-7
We're this is going to be a bad movie. I believe Brian has reordered this. Okay, we're in the C pluses still. There's a feather in our cap. Fill the void. Okay, yeah, that's an Israeli Talmudic.
All right.
Movie. So we're going to re-roll 2207.
Didn't seem to like it very much, huh?
I didn't. It was extremely insular. The Souvenir from 2019. Yes, that was on David Ehrlich's top 10. And Tilda Swinton is in that.
Tilda Swinton is in The Beach.
She is.
The Beach has Leonardo DiCaprio.
Sure. He is in The Revenant.
With Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy is in Spawn.
What? I don't think that's right.
It's a new one.
No.
No?
No. Are you thinking of something else? Not Spawn?
No. Not Spawn. I'm sorry. Venom.
There it is. Yeah, okay.
Sorry. Right. My bad.
Michelle Williams is in Venom. Michael J. White is in Spawn. And Michael Douglas, strangely enough. No,
really?
Martin Sheen. Yeah.
Wait, in Spawn?
Mm-hmm.
He is in Spawn. John Leguizamo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Damn it, Tom Hardy.
All right. Where do we go? Michelle Williams?
Yeah.
I can't say Dawson's Creek, can I?
Last.
Manchester by the Sea.
Manchester by the Sea to Drew.
Manchester by the Sea. Sorry, Shane. I got a challenge.
Casey Affleck.
Yep. Casey Affleck is in Gone Baby Gone.
Is he really?
Yes.
Yeah, he's in that. Fucking
it's very good.
Overrated movie.
It is. It is pretty good.
Oh, yeah. It's wildly overrated. Anyway, Ben Affleck.
No.
It's like, oh, good shit. I got it mixed up, didn't I?
He directed.
Okay. I'm out.
Okay. Morgan Freeman was in Gone Baby Gone.
I got it.
Gone to the Baby.
I was thinking Gone Girl. That's why I was like, well, he's in that.
Yeah.
Which is wildly overrated.
Gone Baby Gone was the first movie that Ben Affleck directed.
Gotcha.
In 2007. Very good. Great year for Casey Affleck in 2007. All right. The clean sweep.
Yeah.
On the movie game.
Good job. You beat a bunch of third graders in basketball.
I just sent them all to the dentist. Swatted the ball right back in their dumb teeth.
There you go.
Focus. Next month on the Mutica Movie Club, we've selected... We're going back to our random ways. We're watching News of the World from 2020, starring Tom Hanks. That's a Western. We're watching CODA on Apple Plus, which stands for Child of Deaf Adults, I want to say.
Oh.
I don't know. It's some kind of acronym. It's all capitalized. That'll rhyme nicely with one of our recent favorites, Sound of Metal, that we reviewed a few months ago, I imagine, in the sense only that it's about deaf people.
Yeah.
And we're also watching The Many Saints of Newark, which comes out in a few weeks. I don't know why I'm dating this podcast. I'm not going to get to it for a little bit. But that is the Sopranos semi-prequel. More like takes place in the Sopranos world in a period of time before the events of the show. The reviews came out today. A little middling.
Yeah.
I'm fairly disappointed. But we'll see. Who knows?
B-minus movie, right? That's what
I'm... Who knows? Yeah. AV Club gave it a C.
Fuck the AV Club.
The film critics of the AV Club.
No, they're done. By. They're done.
I disagree.
It's done. Maybe.
But in the meantime, you can check us out on the internet at MuticMovie.club. Our podcast stream is there and available on most podcatchers, where we have been discussing Sopranos episodes in batches of four in advance of The Many Saints of Newark. It's been a lot of fun. We just published the second one of those, and the third and the fourth will be coming shortly. We still have to talk about the bad episodes of The Sopranos, and the dream episodes of The Sopranos are that episode's been recorded and will come out shortly. Like us on Facebook at Mutica Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Mutica Movie Club. And Instagram at Mutica Movie Club. And again, MuticaMovie.club. So many movie reviews. You can just really get into my head in any given moment about how I feel about 80s teen comedies like The Breakfast Club, which I gave a C+ to. It was better than I thought it was going to be.
Oh.
I expected trash just because I really don't like John Hughes. Fair enough. It wasn't trash. It was really dumb in parts, certainly. But, you know, it's got its moments. And that Anthony Michael Hall, he's going places.
He was.
Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Away from Anthony C. Hall to catch a stray right at the end.
Congratulations on making it to the championship in fantasy baseball.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, podcast over. We got it.